Blog Talk Radio.
And good evening to the New Africa Business Association Blog Talk Radio. I am your host, Bilal Masadik Bynum, and I am saying welcome to tonight's show. I am going to welcome my co-host.
Greetings, and assalamu alaikum to you, Bilal, and the audience. Greetings. Glad to see you this evening.
Welcome to another edition of our shows tonight. We're expecting a lively show. We got several guest speakers, Brother Aziz. We didn't have them scheduled on the program, but we're certainly glad to have them. And our first speaker, of course, is going to be Brother Miller. He's going to be coming on with us tonight, bringing us up to date on some of the wonderful things our investment bankers and other professionals that are helping us to grow our community, along with also Dr. Miller, the sister, I think, to Brother Paul Miller. I understand she's going to be coming on, so we are expecting to have a real lively show, hopefully, before the evening is gone. But right now, like I said, welcome to the show and giving everybody a chance to come on to the show. We'll just take a little music break and come right back.
Okay.
And good evening. Welcome again to the New Africa Business Association. I am your host, Bilal Masadik Bynum, along with my co-host,
Abdul Aziz Shaheed. And greetings.
And we like to say welcome, greetings to our audience. Of course, tonight we're going to be having our special guest speakers. Like I said, our 7 o'clock program, which consists of our Eastern Standard Time. And by the way, brothers and sisters, this is the New Africa Business Association Black Belt Wall Street Business Association. I will repeat that because that's who we are. The New Africa Business Association Black Belt Wall Street. And so from here on, you will be receiving a lot of information on the New Africa Business Association and Black Belt Wall Street as we go along. Brother Aziz, as you know, before we go to our guest speakers, giving everybody a chance to come on the telephone so they can hear our guest speakers, any comments that you may have. And I also want to congratulate you on your niece's new TV program that you can inform of us. I saw it last night, and I thought it was a very nice program.
Yeah, thank you, Brother. We're praying that she be successful at it and continue. She's just starting out a career, so, you know, just the first series. So it seemed good. It's a program on Fox TV, Our Kind of People. And Lana K. Bright is my niece, my great niece. And I'm glad you had the opportunity, Brother Bilal, to watch that show. It's going to be something similar to Dallas. That program, Dallas, only going to be African American, and that's high and rich and looking down on the poor and a whole lot of gossip and stuff that's hidden in the closet that they don't want revealed, skeletons in the closet, you know. So, yeah, that's a new series that's coming out with African Americans in it, and a niece, Alana K. Bright's in there. But, you know, another thing, Brother Bilal, dealing with business, hospitals in the state of Colorado and Idaho, the hospitals and ICUs, the ICUs in the hospitals are filled to capacity. They can't take no more. People with strokes, any other kind of common sickness outside of the COVID, you got to go find help somewhere if you can. And most of us, you got to go out of state, and it's really affecting business bad because restaurants, school bus drivers, and it just goes on and on with the number of people that are affected with this COVID. I don't know. It's just my opinion. Whether we believe it'll do any good or not, we should take it because evidently, it's proof that it does someone some good because these deaths that we're having in the country is just—it's astonishing, brother. And it's all because no one had no protection, just like the flu shot. There's a number of people die in this country every year from the flu, and you know, just because they decided not to get flu shots primarily, but there is something to help, maybe not prevent them from getting the flu, but if they did catch it, it wouldn't be as severe as it would be if they didn't have any protection at all. And this is what we're saying, scientists are saying about the COVID. Whether be being lied to or not, that's, you know, we don't know. All we know is it's doing more good than others. So this disease is affecting business big time because shipments from China, fruit shipments. So right now, as you know, Brother Bilal, in the meat and poultry industry, that wings, chicken wings, there's a big shortage of chicken wings all across the country. Not because they're not available, it's just that production line workers and that, they get sick too. People that produce our food, they get sick also. And that slows everything down. And because of that shortage of stuff, also in the home repair, the lumber industry and that, prices are going up because there's a shortage of these products based on availability. So this one COVID thing, Brother Bilal, COVID-9 disease, it's affecting business tremendously. And I just think that, and, you know, no one has to go by what I say because it's just an opinion, but I do believe that getting the vaccination would help tremendously, would help. I understand this week in particular, just this week, the major southern states that were anti-vaccine, that their rates have gone down 15%, which is, it's a chunk out of 100%, 15%. It's a little bit that's gone down, but it's only for this week. And with the advent of sports coming back, football and the stadiums and all that, we'll just see. But my point is that COVID has had a major impact on business in this country, major, in all our communities.
Yes, Brother Aziz, you're absolutely right. I think I've seen more COVID cases this year, and I know most of them have touched my family more this year than seems like it was going on last year when we was into the higher numbers in the pandemic. But for some reason this year, I am running into quite a few folks who are, and I'm running into a lot of the younger folks that are catching the virus. So, yes, I think the shots are, I'm almost reassured that the shots would be a very preventive, it would prevent all of this. But, of course, we have so many, and like you said, for some reason, look like the those are in the South and look like a lot of the information I'm getting about folks who are catching the disease are in the South. Like I said, I do know that we do have Brother Harris. I was trying to give our audience plenty of time to come on. I do notice that I have to apologize because when we sent out the announcement this week, we forgot to send attachments out. So a lot of our information, folks couldn't go into the attachments and see what our program was about tonight. But our program, of course, is a continuation of Selma, Alabama, and the wonderful opportunities that I know that exist. And again, being that we are, like I said, Black Belt Wall Street, Selma, Alabama is the first example of what I know, and the brother that I'm getting ready to come on, to bring on him. Again, I see our telephones, our board is filling up here a bit, and I want to make certain that we get a good audience because we don't want to waste this brother's time, his information, and they travel. If you knew the work that I know that Brother Sam Harris and those investment bankers and other professionals that he worked with, they keep me informed. They call me and they tell me where their different locations and what they're doing. And a lot of you guys just don't know, but these brothers are out there working 24/7. When we're asleep somewhere, they're on an airplane traveling all kinds of different places. And they're doing it to, like I said, when it talks about the bringing back the success of Black Belt Wall Street and knowing the history, but not only knowing the history, but bringing back the success of Black Belt Wall Street. This is our objective. And I tell you right now, those of us who do what was done in the past, and that is bring back these successful businesses all over Black communities, all over this country, is going to make many of us wealthy. But I am going to stop telling a story that Brother Harris, I'm going to bring him on and let him explain the hard work that those brothers and sisters are doing. Brother Harris, are you with us?
Yes, sir. Good afternoon, Brother Bynum, Brother Aziz. So good to hear your
voice.
Good
afternoon.
It's always good to hear from you, and Brother, thanks so much. Like I said, I know the hard work and the hard work that you guys have done, all what we know is going to be the success again of Black Belt Wall Street. But Brother Harris, I'm going to turn it over to you, and you can bring everybody right up to date, Black Belt Wall Street, and what we're doing as we speak.
Okay, great. Thank you so much, Brother Bynum. I listened to the program last week. I called Brother Bynum a day later. I was supposed to be on the phone so that I could let people know where we were at and what we were doing. And we were so laser beam focused that I called 24 hours later after the show was over. But I just want to say to both you, Brother Aziz, and Brother Bynum, you guys did a dynamic job explaining what we're trying to do in the Black Belt Wall Street districts all across America. And I want to thank, you know, New Africa Business Association, all the members that are listening. Our communities are on ICU. We need high growth entrepreneurship in the African-American community now, not tomorrow, not next year, not 2 years from now. We need people to act now. If you have capital that you need to deploy, we have projects and places where that money can go to work. As Brother Aziz was speaking about COVID-19, COVID-19 is real, but we have traveled since the last time that I was on the call. We traveled to more than 10 different cities, and everywhere I go, the communities that are the most devastated are the African-American communities. African-American businesses have been shuttered by more than 80% all across America. Right now, as I speak to you, we're out in Nevada, in Las Vegas. The communities out here, they're thriving. They're making money. The hotels are full. They're sold out. So if the hotels in Vegas are sold out, it tells you that there is money on the ground. There's money on the streets. But unfortunately, we don't have enough of us pooling our resources together, practicing collaborative economics, to where we're working together to be more than a group, but to be a force that can be able to make a mark that can never be erased in the Black Belt District, Wall Street. We need more men and women, whether it be Tulsa, Oklahoma, Fort Worth, Texas, Dallas, Texas, Oakland. We were in Dallas last week. We visited Fort Worth. For those of you that were familiar with the first time in our country that Juneteenth was actually a national holiday, Juneteenth needs to be a marker not for us to go out and spend money, but for us to invest our capital in a collaborative way to where we can help build the Black Belt Wall Street districts all across America. We got an opportunity, Brother Bynum, Brother Aziz, to visit with Miss Opal Lee. She is what they call the grandmother of Juneteenth holiday. They have provided her with declarations from the President of the United States, the Vice President of the United States, and Congress. Right now, we're in the works with them and their group to help them build the National Juneteenth Museum in Fort Worth, Texas. And the reason why they're building it in Texas, that is where Ms. Opal Lee is from. And we need capital to help them build this $100 million project that they're working on. There are different programs from different shops, retail shops to business centers, grocery stores, all different types of things that need to be done all across America. But it is just amazing that there are so many people out here that have money that they're ready to deploy, and the only group that we seem to have a challenge with is our own group, which is African-American. Now, nothing against any African-American woman or man, but we have to change the way that we see investing into our community. We can't look into what I'm getting today or what my return is, and that is important. We have to look at the bigger picture. What will our community look like 5 years or 10 years from now if we all pool our resources together in a collaborative way to where we're practicing group economics, that we're building new high-growth technology companies, that we're building new farming industries, that we are completely retooling the infrastructure of the African-American community. If you look across the landscape of America, wherever there is an African-American community reside, the location is the most valuable location in the city. It's the most valuable location in the city strategically, because when nobody wanted to live in those places, they went elsewhere, and African-American families took on life, built a life out of nothing. They literally created something out of nothing. Our ancestors, our mothers, our fathers, our aunts, our grandparents, great-grandparents, they built something out of nothing in the communities where we currently reside, and our youth that now hold title to those properties are letting those properties go for almost nothing, not understanding if you own it, you have control. Ownership gives you control not only to create a better destination for you and your family, but it also gives you a say-so in what happens within these communities where we live. So I am encouraged what we see on the ground, but we need more African-American men and women, Brother Bynum, engaged at the highest level. So it brings me to three topics that I want to talk about. Number one is Selma. Selma, Alabama, is the gateway of opportunity for the Black Belt District. The Black Belt District, for those that may be on the call the first time or for those that haven't heard from us before, the Black Belt District is what created what people refer today as Black Wall Street. There will be no Black Wall Street without the Black Belt District. From Galveston, Texas, all the way up to New York City and Harlem, you will hear people refer to, in Southside Chicago, the Black Belt. You will hear Malcolm X in his speech, The Ballad of the Bullet, talking about Harlem as the Black Belt of New York. You will hear people in South Carolina talk about the Black Belt, Georgia, North Carolina, Texas, Mississippi, Tennessee, because cotton was king. Cotton was a king crop that created more wealth than any other industry. After Eli Whitney created the cotton gin, it used to take an entire day for somebody to go through a 50-pound bale of cotton to remove the seeds from the cotton. When the cotton gin was created, it ramped up production. Our ancestors were the ones out in those fields picking that cotton. So our ancestors are the ones that built the wealth of America in the Black Belt. But we as African-American men and women are not recognizing how strong and how valuable we are not only to our communities, to our families, but to this entire nation. This entire nation would not be where it's at today if it were not for the Black Belt. The Black Belt District created cotton by 500-pound bales that was being shipped all across the world to Europe, to Australia, to China, to Africa, because the United States had figured out a way to get more production than any other foreign nation and any other entity. And the reason how they were able to do that was through slavery. Because they had free slave labor, our ancestors that sweat and bled on this soil in the Black Belt, because they had that free labor, they were able to create wealth beyond measure. No country could compete with the United States of America and the African-American men and women that were in those fields picking that cotton. We owe it to ourselves. We owe it to our families to reclaim the Black Belt and create Black Belt Wall Street districts all throughout America, so that we can make sure that our families and our children's children thrive in the future, because
We're going to draw a line in the sand. We're not going to talk about what happened, what didn't happen, what should have happened. We're going to talk about what we're going to do right now. And if we can be honest with each other, we have the money to do what is necessary in our community. Stop spending money on Louis Vuitton, on Gucci, on Fila, or L'Oreal, or any of these other major brands, Cadillac, Mercedes. If you drive, there's nothing wrong with that. But make sure you're reinvesting into your community. If you're going to have the luxuries of life, make sure that you're putting back. Because that's what our ancestors did. They made sure that they put back for us to have the chance that we have today. So I'm going to say it again. Selma, Alabama is ground zero. There will be no Black Wall Street without the Black Belt District. The Black Belt District created the wealth of America. It is time for us as African-American men and women to reclaim this by becoming high-growth entrepreneurs, high-growth investors, and big visionaries, creating our own table. We no longer need to ask for permission to be at a table. As I speak, we're in Vegas. We're creating our own table in Vegas by creating development pools of African-American men and women that are at the highest level of their education, their careers. We're talking architects, engineers, plumbers, designers, bankers, real estate professionals. We're coordinating a network of men and women. If we're able to do it right in Selma, Selma is the blueprint. When we have thousands of men and women with high IQs, high intelligence, high appetite for success, and a track record, we will be able to tap into that intellectual knowledge and go to Tulsa, Oklahoma, go to Fort Worth, go to Elizabeth, North Carolina, go to Washington, D.C., go to Southside, Chicago, Oakland, go out to parts in Nevada. We can go all over, Little Haiti down in Miami. If you look at what's happening today, we have Haitian immigrants that are trying to get to America. While we were in Texas, where we were at, they were under the bridge. Folks, you never know how real this immigration system thing is until you see it firsthand. Mm-hmm. There are people that are coming for 2,000, 3,000, 5,000, 10,000, 100,000 miles from around the globe to get to America. And they don't care if they have to get on a raft or a boat or a daggone pallet. They're trying to get here because they know if they get here, with all the things that we have had to deal with, they got a shot at having a better life for their family. And as African-American men and women, we already here. Why aren't we practicing collaborative economics, group economics, to where we can do exactly what the Chinese did, where we can do exactly what the Mexicans are doing, the Greek, the Jewish, all the groups that have come to America have identified how to assimilate together, put their resources together to build the type of community so they have an infrastructure to where they can do things and speak in one voice. And that brings me to this point. I know that there are men and women that have incredible ideas and projects, and we want to help them do them. But I promise you, brothers and sisters, if we focus on building Selma out and we get the right resources and the right team of people, we will be able to produce a city, a brand new city, every 6 months once we have the template, the blueprint, and the capital, to where we have to ask no one for permission. We don't have to beg for any money because we will already have it. When you have a blueprint and a game plan of how you're going to execute it, you will be able to do that just like all the like Walmart does. Brother Z, when Walmart says they want to open a store, they don't go out and beg people for money to open a store, right?
Right.
They use the capital that they have been able to accumulate through the different entities that they have that's produced revenue. As we produce the blueprint in Selma, working with men and women that we have been working to target, if there's anybody on this call that wants to be a part of that network of professionals, please go to our website. It is Samgen, S-A-M-J-E-N Realty.com. And if you go to the contact page, put in your information, send us a little note. You would like to be a part of the professional network, or if you would like to be an investor into the projects that we're doing, tell us that you would like to invest in the amount of capital that you want to put in, and let us know that you are a member of the New Africa Business Association, or you heard about us through the New Africa Business Association Black Belt Wall Street, so that we're able to be able to identify those individuals so that we can work together in a collaborative way to make a difference in our communities. So the point number one, and I'm going to open it up here, Brother Bynum, I'm going to just finish with this before you open it up for questions. I was reading the census tract. The census tract has African Americans at 12.9% of the population of the United States. We own less than 1% of real estate assets in America. We have less than 2% representation in any top growth, high growth industry, whether it be real estate and banking. We got less than 2% of our population involved in those fields. We have less than 2% involved in IT and technology. We have less than 2% of the farmers that are out there that's growing our food that are African-American farmers, less than 2%. Now, the Asian Americans have come to our country. They helped build some of the infrastructure. But the Asian American used to hover around 3% of our population. The last census report shows that the Asian American population is 7.9%. Listen to me, my brothers and sisters. If we do not begin practicing collaborative economics, building these black belt districts throughout the United States, creating our own black belt district Wall Streets, the Chinese population, or what they refer to as the Asian population, will topple over the African-American population by 2030. So the reason why we have been going so hard for the last two-plus years traveling all over the country, we are trying to galvanize our communities to not only where we can grow in business, but that we can grow with our families and thrive. Because the moment that we become dead last as a group, we're going to have more challenges than we can ever imagine, simply because we are not working together. So, Brother Aziz, Brother Bynum, I yield back on my first point that I wanted to make about Selma, Alabama, and what we're doing.
Brother Harris, I'm going to open up these mics in just a few moments, but before I do, I have to say that and piggyback on just some of the things you're saying, and that is the urgency of what you're talking about. Brothers and sisters, the African American, I've been saying for the longest time, there are several beautiful things that we have going for us. Number one, we do have our own black communities. I put emphasis to that. We have our own black communities right now. But brothers and sisters, these black communities that we live in are valuable, and they're not valuable just to black folks anymore. They're valuable to the entire world. What do I mean? That means now that if you come into any state, any city in the United States, you're going to find that where can I get a good start in America, and where can I get a good start and can afford that start? Because you can't come to anywhere in America and get a start because the cost could be way too high. But the African-American community all over this country, those communities are already developed. We don't have to go in there and put in no running water. We don't have to take and run any special type of electric. They have the cable capabilities. Our communities have everything but businesses, and that's where we could lose our communities, because If I was to open a business right now, I don't care what nationality I might be, I would be more than happy to come into the African-American community, open a business. Why? Because it's affordable. So I would love to bring my car dealership in here and open up a business. I would love to bring in my filler station, what have you, Sunoco filler station, an Exxon filler station. I don't care. I would love to bring it into the black community. Why? Because there are no filler stations in that community. That is a community that is spending $1.7 trillion in 2020 and 2020. 2021, they're telling me, is going to be even higher because, as you know, they're already after our early, success of the Black Fridays, so-called Black Fridays, that's that Christmas holiday. That success was so high last year, until now they want to start it even before Thanksgiving. I'm sorry, the Halloween thing. That's what they want to start it as early as that, because why? The huge amount of monies that they know that they're going to be getting out of that black community, and they know they got to get it from the black, other communities too, but more so the black communities than any other community, simply because we don't have any businesses in our communities. Now, you start talking about the Haitians coming, you start talking about the Asians coming, you start about the Hispanics, you start about the Afghans, you start talking about all of these folks that are coming. Yes, they're coming. And they're going to want to get established. But African Americans, we are already here. We're already in our communities. But if we don't take the advantage of making our communities productive, it's already happening. What I am saying right now, I drove just 100 miles from Washington, D.C. up to Delaware. And Delaware is only 100 miles from Washington, D.C., and it's my hometown. It's where I was born. I haven't been there in a long time because of, the conditions of living there. But anyway, I was there for the last couple of weeks, and one of the things that I found the proof of what I'm saying right in my own hometown. You could go to a city right now that I graduated from high school, Georgetown, Delaware. Georgetown, Delaware, when I was a kid, black folks couldn't even go down in the town section of that city. Today, a couple of weeks ago, I went to Georgetown, Delaware. White folks have abandoned the town. They build these new towns, these new communities. They build them on the outside of the old communities because they want the up-to-date houses. But Georgetown, Delaware, they took and abandoned the entire town. But when they abandoned the town, they took and rented all of their properties to the Hispanic field workers, the migrant workers, they call them. And then all the workers that work in the chicken factories and all the other hard-working things that low income bring, but this is who they rented their properties to, rather than rent these properties to African Americans. I'm talking about the downtown section of that city. And today, downtown Delaware, you would find that all the commercial activities that's going on in that little town now is all done by Spanish-speaking peoples. Those that used to work in the factories, they don't work in the factories no more. They own businesses. Those that used to be those migrant workers, they don't work in those fields no more. They own businesses. Brothers and sisters, our community is being threatened. And let me say this. These are folks that, like Brother Harris was saying, these folks that are coming in, they're not coming in here single doing anything by themselves. No. They're coming in by entire communities. If you're making low income, a low income wage is $7, $8, $10 an hour, you can't buy an entire city and put all of these businesses in their stores And like I said, the gas stations and all the places that we is at. In other words, African Americans now are spending their monies with the old migrant workers that we used to call seasonal workers. That's who now we're going to spend our monies with, because they're the ones who own the business. The ones that was working in the chicken factories, they're not in the chicken factories no more. African Americans now are in the chicken factories spending their monies with these. This is going to happen with nationalities from all over the world. And like I said, the only place you can possibly go is the African American community, because that's where they can afford to go. And commercial advancement is undeveloped in these communities. Brothers and sisters, sisters and brothers, I've been saying for the longest time, this is something that you can't do by yourself. We must do it as a financially vested community. And my goodness, again, when you start looking at the amount of monies that we put into our churches, and you start looking at the amount of monies that we do in consumer spending, brothers and sisters, I was hypothetically thinking about this. You know, you can easily round off the figures at about probably around $2 trillion a year just from consumer spendings. And I haven't even added taxations. I'm just talking about our charitable spendings and our consumer spendings. If we took and grew our communities collectively with those funds, Black Belt Wall Street, and we all would be millionaires and be successful just like our aunt sisters who was the members of the Black Belt Wall Street. I am a financial planner. I'm retired, and I've been saying 100 times, I'm retired. I should be set back looking at the mailman bringing me a fixed income, but now I'm not satisfied with that. I'm still willing to put my funds with your money and build these communities, even though at my age I may not benefit from my investment, but I know who will benefit: my siblings, my estate, and folks in my communities. We must do this together. So I'm going to open this mic up, Brother Harris. I didn't mean to take up too many of your time, but I'm going to open the mics up to those who have questions for you. And also let everybody know that
I won't be walking far with this.
We have a long program tonight because we're on into 9 o'clock. So again, and I will also ask that wait for your turn to be spoken. I got the mics open again, and it's already happening. Brothers and sisters, I'm going to have to close the mic. If you start speaking into your mics, and we can hear you, I am going to have to close the mics. Right now, the mics are open where we can all be hearing, and we can get your opinions. But right now, I'm going to ask you to please do not speak until you're ready to speak into your mics. So, again, I am going to go to questions, but if I hear the stag back, I'm going to close our mics off, and we will just have one person speaking at a time. So right now, our mics are open. We welcome your comments. Any comments that you personally may have, or you may have comments with Brother Harris, or you may have just general comments, the New Africa Business Association and Black Belt Wall Street welcome your questions. Brothers and sisters, we welcome your questions. The mics are open.
Well, this is Brother Aziz. I'd like to thank Brother Harris for such a thorough understanding of how important it is to invest in the Selma Black Wall Street Black Belt project that's going on in Selma, and the value that it would be in the future. And I noticed, as listening to Brother Harris, that all his information is based on science, a proven fact, that if you do these things, this is the results that you would get. Payoffs long, long in the future, where, you know, your grandchildren and great-grandchildren will be able to collect from such a good investment. And that's what we need: stable, righteous guided, truthful investment direction to where it's going to benefit us, not only today, but in the future, long in the future. And that's what we're not trying to do. We're not trying to get a payday today. When you're investing, You're not looking for a payday today, tomorrow, or the next day. Investing is long-term projects. And people that, as we used to say, with people that gamble, scared money, you can't win. And it's the same way with investors. Scared money, you can't invest. If this is something that you would like to do and we know that it is best and good for us, then invest. Invest in projects, especially in the Selma, Alabama project. And I just wanted to thank Brother Harris for explaining this so good to our listeners. And it's quite clear what the choice is. And those that have funds to invest, that want to invest in the future for not only their children, and if they're young, then, you're investing for yourselves too. Don't hesitate. Don't wait, because the brother said that other people other than our community are buying up all the land around, all the downtown spaces where people go shopping. And when they do that, you're not going to be able to get in there unless you're paying with an arm and a leg. And to be able to have foresight in that all these places are going to grow. The moment these people see that we're trying to do something, the African-American community is trying to do something, Brother Harris is saying that they're running down trying to buy up all the prime property that would be of great value to us. So I pray everyone that's listening can get the value out of being what's said, because it's great value in what the brother's saying. We want to thank him again for bringing this information to us. And thank you again, Brother Harris.
Thank you, Brother Aziz. Brother Aziz. And I just wanted to kind of iterate with both what you and Brother Bynum were elaborating on. One of the things that we have in our communities, we have what we call is tone deaf, the cone of silence. When we're talking real to people, giving them honest hard truth, our community is silent. We're silent on the things that matter. We're silent on investing. We're silent on ownership. We're silent on creating generational wealth. The only time we seem to be able to talk it is when someone's out protesting, when someone's got shot, or when someone's got killed, or when it seems like the pandemic and someone's getting free money and we're not getting our fair shake. We can't blame the other groups that come to our country, that come to our communities, buy our properties at a cheap dollar amount when we can be doing that ourselves. Mm-hmm. And then when they do good for themselves, we want to talk about how the Hispanic group or the Mexican group or the Afghanistan group or whoever they may be has taken over. It didn't just happen. Mm-hmm. Those people that come to the communities where African Americans live, those people work long hours, hard hours, just like we do. But they got enough common sense to know that we're going to work as a group, and that when it's time to speak up, we're not going to be silent. You know, so if you're on this call and if your butt is itching and your butt's on the edge of the seat and you got something that you want to say or you have a question, the time is now for you to do it. Stop holding back. Stop being silent when we are in an ICU moment within our community. We need men and women not only to speak up, but to put action behind those words, put actions behind what they dream their city could be or their community could be, because it won't happen for you. First, it starts in the mind. If you want to ever have anything done, it has to start with your imagination, one of the most powerful things that you have as a being. The Creator put that there. So whatever you see in your mind and you put it to paper, it can happen. But it's got to start with a belief, and you got to talk about it. You have to engage. So if there's anybody that's out there, before I go into my next topic, that if you got a question about what we're doing or that you can contribute some kind of way, please let us know.
Our mics are open, brothers and sisters. We welcome your questions. Our mics are open. I got all the mics open. If you can hear us, we can certainly hear you. Our mics are open. We welcome your questions. All right, let's let everybody know that it's coming to the top of the hour. We will be continuing our show. This is the New Africa Business Association, and usually the New Africa Business Association takes the 7 to 8 o'clock time. The New Africa Business Association, Black Wall Street, the Eastern Standard Time. And so at 8 o'clock, we will be switching over to our standard time. And, of course, we'll be going out to Texas, Mississippi, Oklahoma. And those of you that are on our standard time will be joining those of us who are on our Eastern time. And we will take our show right on up to 9 o'clock Eastern Standard Time. Of course, that would be, I think, 8 o'clock Standard Time. So, we welcome anyone who is on our Eastern Standard Time, Miss Williams, Director Stones, and I understand we have a special guest. Dr. Miller is going to be coming on, sharing some very valuable information. But brothers and sisters, this is, like I said, all over this country, we are trying to bring our communities together. And like I said, tonight when you start hearing investment opportunities, of course you like the investment opportunities we're talking about. And we're not asking for you may not have the monies right now. But if we know that we had your pledges, you see, it's not only Selma that we're trying to invest in. We're trying to invest in places in your own hometown, your own home state. So not only are we asking for pledges, but we ask for business activities that's going on in your community. Like I said, it's no time to be silent. All voices are to be heard here because, again, we're trying to keep the wealth in our communities. And like I said, brothers and sisters, the wealth that we're trying to keep is the wealth that we're already consuming, whether it's a consumer spending, or whether it's a charitable spending, or whether it's taxationable spending. It's all coming from the power of the black dollar. Again, a greetings to everybody. Our mics are open. We welcome your comments.
Yeah, Brother Bynum, you know, I was at a venture capital meeting last week in Dallas when I called you, and one of the gentlemen sitting at the table is an Italian-American. And when we explained to him what we're doing in Selma in the Black Belt District, Black Wall Street, he was so excited about the opportunity. He says, you know what makes me so excited about this opportunity? He says, I don't know the walk of an African-American person, but he says, I do know that it is different. And he says, the reason why my thought pattern is different and I want to help you guys do what you're trying to do in Selma, he says, my daughter just got married. She married an African-American male. He says, I had no idea the different things that you had to go through until I spent time with my son-in-law. And this man, he teared up. So not only African-American men and women, we need your help. We need the help of all the other groups that are out there that on the backs of African-American have been able to benefit. He said in his own words, growing up in little Italian communities, he says they practice group economics, but they knew without the African-American people, they would have never had a chance.
No.
He says it was the African-American families that brought the brutal cost in this country through slavery, through Jim Crow sharecropping. And he says, right now, the rest of my life, I'm going to spend it to try to right some wrongs. He says, because when I look at my grandbaby, he says, I'm looking at what she may have to go through in the society that we're in. He says, but it doesn't have to be that way. If we can all work together and do the common good to help the vast majority of people that just want to have a good life for their family, just want to be able to go to their community and have places that are not food deserts. And he said to me, he says, you know, as growing up as a kid, he said, I can remember my grandparents
always would tell me the African American community and African American people are sitting on acres of diamonds and don't even know it.
Yes.
Let me repeat that to you again.
Do it, please, please.
The Jewish
yeah.
groups, the Italian groups, Asian, Latin American, Mexican, they all know that we are sitting on acres of diamonds and we don't even know it.
Mm-hmm.
What I'm trying to say to you individuals mm-hmm. that are on this call that may be listening, that want to do something in your community, if you don't understand the genealogy of how to find out if you got diamonds in your backyard, then you need to go hire someone that studies rocks
mm-hmm.
and someone that's a scientist and get them to do a field test in your community. So let us be
mm-hmm.
that diamond gem person, that diamond geologist. Let Sam Jam be your
yeah.
geologist so that we can tell you what is needed in your community and where the capital can come from by us working together, that we can harvest those acres of diamonds in our own community right now. If you don't know how to look for the, if you're looking for gold, if you're like, I'm out here in my farm, there's nothing here. And it brought me back to this story, Brother Bottom. I've always used to read Cornwell, and he was an author, African-American person, that contributed to Temple University
mm-hmm.
to start the program back over 100 years ago. And he wrote a book called Acres of Diamonds. And he said is that our people, if we can ever have the ability to think and use that to grow, our own acres of diamonds will appear before us.
Yeah.
You have to think to grow rich.
Mm-hmm.
You have
right.
to think where you want to go to in order for it to happen. But while you're thinking, don't wait for somebody to show up. Don't wait for the right day or the right moment. Start where you're at right now. So I would like to just end with this. I know we're going into the next hour. We got a couple minutes left. We are looking to get the remaining capital. And Brother Bond, do you think I should wait till the next program or kind of do it right now?
I would go ahead and conclude with what you have to say and forward, because again, you know, it's always what the last speaker says, what the audience is going to remember. So I
okay.
would go ahead and share my information right now.
All right, great. So right now in Selma, Alabama, which we have expressed numerous times, and Brother Bynum and Brother Aziz have done an amazing job letting the people know in our community, we're trying to raise the funds to purchase that shopping center. We have not got any participation from the African-American communities. We've had to either use our own funds or funds of other groups that want to help us. Now, we're almost there. We need about $180,000 to be able to raise within the next 72 hours so that we can meet our deadline, so that we can be able to have our contract in to try to win this bid on this property. And what we're asking for individuals, if you have any money that you want to invest into the communities, you can go to samgenrealty.com, go to the comment section, or where it says contact us, and give us your name, your number, that you would like to be able to invest into what we're doing. We are going to provide a 10% return on that capital. Because it's such a small dollar amount, there would not be any equity for people that's given less than $25,000 opportunity. So if you have $5,000, $10,000, $15,000, we would absolutely like to be able to have you engage with us. But we can use that capital to equal up to the total sum of what we need, and you will get a 10% return on your capital, which will be repaid back to you in 90 days, and that will be an actual agreement that you will have with our brokerage, which will be Sam Jam Realty. So for anyone that is interested in being a part of what we're trying to do, no matter how small it is, if the minimum that we're asking for is $5,000, or more, that's the minimum. to be able to be a part of this opportunity for us to get the last portion of what we need for this investment that we're doing in Selma. And if you can get into samgnrealty.com, go to contact us at the top of our webpage, put in your email address, and let us know how we can engage so that you can be a part of what we're doing in Selma. So, Brother Azee, Brother Bynum, I want to thank you for having me on this call.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks so much, Brother Harris. Again,
just
before we go, anybody have any questions for Brother Harris before we switch over to Black Wall Street, our Spend the Time program? Any questions before we conclude? Well, we're not concluding. He'll still be with us, but before our next speakers or our next directors take over. Okay, if there's no questions, then in that case, I am going to ask, we have any representatives from Black Wall Street out in Texas, Oklahoma, Director Stone, Ms. Williams, or any of our directors out in the those areas? We welcome
you. As-salamu alaykum, brothers and sisters.
Wa alaykum salam.
This is Joyce calling in from Oklahoma City, Oklahoma.
Yeah, good evening.
And we just want to say that Brother Harris, and I know the time is now. The time is past, actually. Hoping, just keep plugging at us, brother. I don't know who can, but some can. And if we keep putting the word out there, perhaps someone or some of us will at least make an attempt. Because who knows? See, this is just my opinion. But they're not concerned about the Hispanic community or the Afghan community, even the Asian community. They keep their focus on the African-American community because they know with a little, we'll get a lot. If we can ever get into the mindset of having, we have to, first of all, get back into the mindset of having. And at the same time, some of us as entrepreneurs, we need to know how to conduct business. Because when you're standing there and people expect you to give them your money, and you got that soul sister handshake rolling your head and eyes all around, people aren't going to want to participate. At the same time, as a kid growing up, right there, as my brother had said in Delaware, I can remember when they would throw our change back at us. We had to put our money on the counter. So there are things that we need to overcome as a people and know our worth. Once we decide that we are worthy of more than much, much more than what we're receiving, I feel that we are going to be a better person. So with that in mind, brothers and sisters, hopefully we have Dr. Grant, are you with us? Okay, well, maybe she'll be on a little later on. I just wanted to continue, if possible, to let Brother Harris, if he's still on, just keep beating us up, brother. Just keep putting it on our minds and letting us know what we need to do, because we are so broke down as a race. I don't know when we're going to be able to bounce back. Because when we try to come up with new ways of keeping us back, just like, for instance, right here in Oklahoma City, they have come up with this new thing now, like the river rafters and river boats and races and things of this nature, where they have designed over here by the bridge, right off of I-40, they have designed a real nice, beautiful activities and family activities for the other children, everyone can come out with their blankets and things and sit on the side of the little river thing and do activities. They even got a Ferris wheel out there. But the only thing is, where that bridge comes to the east side, they have it dammed. So I would like to know, why is the river not free flowing? How come the water doesn't continue on our side of that bridge so that we can have some activities? So, hon, you know, they're still, as they say, sticking it to us. They still are. But we have to recognize and get around that. So I am interested. I'm going to put my phone back on mute to wait for Dr. Grant to join us. And it, but
okay.
Until then, let us continue.
Well, I'm here.
Oh, very good, very good, very good. Good evening, Dr. Grant. And how are you doing this evening?
Good evening. Good evening.
Brothers and sisters, be in for another meeting. Dr. Grant, and we're just going to let now. Some of you may remember her when she would be on with Dr. Stone's show there with Black Wall Street USA. And she was always a marvel to listen to. And she also will be instrumental or could be instrumental in helping us to get the word out, Brother Harris, our communities. So, Sister Grant, I'm just going to be quiet and welcome you to the show and to the call, and you may take it from here. Thank you so much.
Okay, thank you. I just want to clarify that Sister Stone asked me to talk in depth about the vaccines and what can be done. I asked her how far down the rabbit hole did you guys want me to go, and she said go as far as, you know, I wanted to. So I just want to clarify that with you.
I was on mute. Excuse me, Dr. Grant. Listen, hon, we need, in our community, we need all the advice and information we can receive. If Brother Bilal and Brother Aziz had no problem with it,
okay.
We are so ready to receive your information and your message.
Okay. I thought that the best way to do to deliver this information is to I have the something that I wrote last night and the introduction to my new book, which is dealing with the lockdown and everything that happened with 2020 and what led up to these events. So I put the whole scenario into perspective so that people can understand the agenda behind it and how all-encompassing this agenda is and how complicated it is, but at the same time how simple it was for them to implement it. So I thought it would be good to just share what I have already written and then open it up to questions that people might have. But I want to start out by saying that I am a researcher. I'm an award-winning writer and educator who has retired from teaching critical thinking. But the way that I think and the way that I research, and I've traveled and lived all over the world, studying, you know, I've read the Bible three times backwards and forward, and I studied all of the world's religions, and what I see is the similarities in them and also how our belief systems are playing into this whole plan and how often they're used against us. So I'm using a caveat to say that a lot of the research that I'm offering tonight and the information that I'm offering tonight, it might be shocking for some people. It may not be surprising to other people, but I want the audience to just receive it as research that has taken 30 years on my part to put together, because my whole thing as a critical thinker is to connect the dots and to take the mystery out of what's going on. So So if you guys could please just receive it as information and take whatever resonates with you and use it, and whatever does not resonate with you, then leave it behind. Because all of it is related, and I didn't censor myself. I have a new book that is going to be released in a few weeks, and it's dealing with, it's called The Eight Addictive Shadow Cells, and everyone is familiar with the seven deadly sins, but most people don't know that they were that there were originally eight of them, and the Catholic Church changed a lot of it. But this introduction to the book, I brought it current with what's going on today and how the eight addictive shadow cells, which is what I call them, are playing into this, and how what I also call the isms, which are nationalism, sexism, racism, and classism, how they are playing very heavily in this whole scenario. So is this making sense, the introduction, before I go into the real heart of the matter? Is everyone resonating with that so far?
We're good. We're good, Dr. Brandt.
Okay. All right. So this little piece, my brand is called the Unpolitically Correct Truth, because I think this politically correct thing is designed to keep us from speaking the truth. And I'm calling this little intro the change that has come in honor of Sam Cooke. So the time, I believe that the time for silence and denial are done, and the change that Sam Cooke sang about has finally come in ways that few were prepared for, even though they should have known it was coming. After all, George Orwell warned Americans about the perils of fascism in 1948 when he published his book, 1984. The definition of fascism is a political philosophy, movement, or regime that exalts nation above the individual, and that stands for a centralized autocratic government headed by a dictatorial leader that brings forth severe economic and social regimentation and forcible suppression of oppression, of opposition, I'm sorry. And I think what everybody saw in 2020, and you couldn't miss it even if you were blind, was the overt attack on freedom of speech and the censorship of social media and this whole political correct stance, but it's all designed to shut down opposition. So hindsight is 2020 vision, but I think if you look back in retrospect, you'll see that in a matter of days, the New World Order emerged out of the Illuminati shadows in 2020 and placed the entire globe on what turned out to be perpetual lockdown, but started out as a 30-day lockdown. What concerned me most was that the people's rights didn't even have to be taken from them. The vast majority of the people simply gave up their rights based on fear over a virus, even though the body's immune system has proven quite capable of killing cold and flu viruses every flu season. The point I'm making is that people around the world gave voluntary consent by placing themselves under house arrest and agreeing to keep 6 feet of separation between themselves, their neighbors, family, and friends based on an alleged virus that was highly contagious and deadly. This incredible feat was accomplished with the full support of the United Nations, the World Health Organization, the CDC, and every government on the planet. The wild part was that the discussion I heard early on in 2020 from officials about coming up with a vaccine to cure this virus was rather ludicrous, when I also knew that Pfizer, Moderna, and Johnson & Johnson already had patents approved for a COVID vaccine before the virus was ever even unleashed or mentioned. But what's even crazier on the part of the people lining up to take this experimental vaccine is the reality that scientists today can't even cure the common cold, let alone the flu. So those who do not learn from history are condemned to repeat it. In Hitler's use of propaganda, he pointed out how easy it is to manufacture consent from the public. Hitler understood that the people have a very short memory of history. Moreover, from a psychological perspective, Hitler also knew that the masses are persuaded easily by simplistic lies that are repeated over and over again via media slogans like, this is the new norm, the new normal, or keep your loved ones safe, get your vaccine today, it's the right thing to do. To prove that Hitler understood all too well how to manipulate the masses, consider this in relationship today. The Spanish influenza in 1917 killed an estimated 17.4 million to 100 million people, with an accepted general range of 25 to 50 million people dying from the Spanish flu. What most people don't know is that it all began with the U.S. military creating a flu vaccine and doing its first mass inoculation of soldiers before they were shipped off to fight in Europe during World War I. The first group of inoculated soldiers were sent to Spain, which is why it was called the Spanish flu. Now, note the repetition of history. The coronavirus was created in a lab in the U.S. at the University of North Carolina and taken to Wuhan, China, where the U.S. was already collaborating with the Chinese to develop germ warfare using viruses. Now, everything that I'm saying, it's well documented, and you can research it yourself. Like Spain, China was blamed for a virus manufactured in the U.S. Of course, China was complicit, but that is only half the story. But back to the Spanish flu. The U.S., who created the Spanish flu and sent it packing around the world, announced that they had a vaccine against the Spanish flu virus. Like today, millions of people lined up to take the flu vaccine back in 1917, 18, and 19. And guess what happened? The millions who died from the Spanish flu had all been inoculated with the flu vaccine. Are you getting the picture? Millions died from a vaccine, not from the flu. Someone's phone is not on mute, not from the flu. There is still no effective vaccine against the flu, even though people take flu shots every year. I remember a decade ago reading about U.S. scientists exhuming the bodies of those who died of the Spanish flu so that they could isolate the Spanish flu virus. That's when I knew there was a plan afoot to unleash another virus accompanied by a deadly vaccine. Because people do not research, let alone remember history, they did not know that it was not the flu virus that killed millions of people during the Spanish influenza. It was the flu vaccine. In 1963, Bob Dylan asked Americans, quote, how many times can a man turn his head and pretend that he just doesn't see, unquote. In 1976, Stevie Wonder admonished hypocrites to, quote, make sure when you say you're in it but not of it, that you're not helping to make this earth a place sometimes called hell. The foregoing begs relevant yet unasked questions that mask facts designed to cover up the truth behind unending lies and denial that permit cowards and expensive suits, most of whom have pale faces, to rain down pain and misery upon a gullible population with a short memory whose brains are easily short-circuited by fear. It is a proven fact that anytime humans go into fear, they cannot think clearly or rationally. Now, here's the role that the isms, the cause of our malcontent, play in all of this. So question number one, why has the lockdown of 2020 succeeded, on the one hand, in empowering those who uphold the Fourth Amendment to protect, to protest loudly against being forced to take a vaccine that provides no immunity, while on the other hand, generating an even wider nationalistic divide between Republican and Democrats, even though there are anti-vaccine supporters on both sides of this divide who are Republican and Democrats? In reality, the inherent right of the people, as stated in the Fourth Amendment, quote, to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures, unquote, includes an individual's body not being seized by military, police, or medical authorities, forcing them to either submit to a vaccine or be stripped of the right to work, buy, sell, trade, travel, or socialize unless they have a, quote, vaccine passport that now includes vaccine boosters for life. Now, the reason why this is relevant is because there are already plans underfoot, and President Biden has already said that he will remove the 21 governors of the 21 states who have provided protection for their citizens, and Oklahoma is one of those states, Texas is one of those states, one of those 21 states that will not allow their citizens to be forced to vaccinate if they don't want to vaccinate. And President Biden has already said he will remove those governors, and he is seeking a federal vaccination mandate for everyone in this country. Now, what's also really important to keep in mind is this really important fact. Now, I'm talking to you from Texas. I am originally from Texas, and our motto is don't mess with Texas. We are the Lone Star State, and Texas was the first of all the states to secede from the Union during the Civil War. Now, make no mistake about it, I can tell you that Texas will be the first state if and when, I'm not saying if because Biden has already said he's going to do it, when that happens, there will be civil war in this country, and it's important for people not to stick their heads in the sand and pretend that it's all good and it ain't going to never happen here. I can tell you that I am not the only person who has predicted that this will happen. There are very, very reputable researchers and political analysts who have said and are saying the same thing. So it's really, really important to keep your eye on this whole vaccine thing and to get this background information so that you understand the big picture behind all of this, because it isn't really about the virus. It's about the vaccine. So I'm going to move on. Clearly, okay, there are multiple agendas at work here, with vaccines being critical to achieving the initial prime directive that's been literally carved in granite upon the monolithic Georgia Guidestones in the state of Georgia, which is commonly referred to as the American Stonehenge. Now, I've been to England, and I've been to Stonehenge. I haven't gone to Georgia to see the Guidestones, but I know what's on those 10 Guidestones, that they're etched in granite like the Ten Commandments. Now, the first guideline is about reducing the world population to 500 million people. Now, we currently have almost 8 billion people on the planet. So this mandate on these gigantic stones says, first, reduce the population to a half a billion people, right? Now, I've been following the Georgia Guidestones since the early 90s. I was teaching my students about it, and I was telling them, guys, this is not an accident. There's a depopulation agenda that's afoot, and I knew that the United Nations was a part of it. So I've been researching this since the early 1990s. So the overarching agenda, which is important, was created by the United Nations, and it's named, ironically, Agenda 21. Now, we are in 2021, and if you notice, the agenda was rolled out in 2020, and I don't know how many of you paid attention to these signs about, you know, national ID and, you know, in 2020. So they started giving hints in 2019 about this national ID card. Okay, so this Agenda 21 was signed by 178 nations in 1992. In essence, Agenda 21 is a comprehensive plan for the New World Order, which is a one-world government, to categorize, catalog, and control everything on this planet, including but not limited to natural resources. Now, when I say all natural resources, that includes the air we breathe, the water we drink, the food that we eat, and the land that we live upon. Okay, so that includes all natural resources, economics, control that, all the money, and you notice we're moving out of real money and into bit, you know, currency, and, you know, a lot of places, remember, in 2020 wouldn't even take cash. You know, they would only take credit cards. Okay, so controlling natural resources, economics, education, health. I mean, what is this all been about? The new health police, law enforcement, and the people. So the question is, how are they going to do this? Well, it's already being done by transferring power from local governments to a global system of control. Now, that is what happened. Everybody saw it in 2020. But what is Biden talking about right now? He's saying that he's going to take power from local governments. You know, each state has the right to govern itself, that he's going to take that power away from local governors, and he's going to mandate that every citizen in the United States must be vaccinated. Okay, so guess what? The nanotechnology that is embedded in the computer code that is contained in the mRNA vaccine, okay, and I'm saying vaccine, but it's not really a vaccine because the vaccine is supposed to provide immunity, okay? This nanotechnology and the computer code are critical for achieving both agendas, which are depopulation and Agenda 21, which is the implementation of the New World Order. Now, that is why Bill Gates stated in 2020 that the lockdown would not end until everyone on the planet is vaccinated. Clearly, it was not an empty threat. It was prophetic. So even I, as an expert on the isms, having taught about them and their interlocking nature for over 20 years, I did not immediately deduce that nationalism would be chosen as the primary ism used to divert attention away from the big picture in order to render the public unable to connect the dots. In effect, the power elite knew that they could count on the political divisions that inherently exist within every nation to serve as causes of contention. The other three isms, however, which are equally as insidious as nationalism, could also be relied upon to work on their own. Automatically, nation states are not only divided against other nations, they are divided internally through sexism, which compels patriarchal males to work against women, racism, which innately prompts whites to work against the best interests of non-whites, and ethnic groups of all colors to work against each other, and then there is classism, which compels the rich upper class to undermine the upward mobility of the middle class, the working class, and the lower class. So, bam, you got all four of the isms working together to the advantage of the power elite. So you see, the power elite intended for the pre-existing artificial class divisions to make the rich richer at the expense of the poor. The elite also knew that the fear-based masses would readily give up their freedom in exchange for the government to protect them from the boogeyman that the government made to frighten them into submission, a man-made virus. Notable examples of the rich getting richer during 2020 are Amazon, Walmart, and the big pharmaceutical giants who made billions in profits in 1 year during the lockdown while small businesses were forced to close their doors permanently. Meanwhile, the inbred racism of white supremacist groups heightened racial tensions by publicly staging the ritualistic sacrificial murder of George Floyd, in honor of America's age-old festive picnics that took place regularly during the 19th century, wherein whites gathered to eat and socialize as they watched the spectacle of a black man publicly lynched and barbecued over an open pit of fire, with whites bidding on buying body parts to take home with them. That is, I'm not making it up, that is widely documented. Simultaneously, sexism created an increase in domestic violence due to the stress of high unemployment caused by the lockdown and the strain of being under voluntary house arrest, unable to do anything other than shop. The 30% increase in food prices, coupled with an inability to travel freely around the world without being subjected to extreme angst and inconvenience, added stress on top of strained relationships. As you can see, the lockdown accomplished exactly what it was designed to do: stress, isolate, and frustrate people to the point where many went stir crazy. Thus, by the end of 2020, most people were willing to agree to pretty much any insane mandate by the new medical Nazi party that came into power during the lockdown. The quote, new normal slogan felt strangely abnormal after a year of being on lockdown. All the people wanted was to get back to business as usual. The plan, however, was never to ever go back to the way things once were. There would be no return to business as usual. Here's the thing about the isms. The power elite knew they could count on them to run on autopilot, producing a pre-programmed dance of divisiveness from within the walls of people's homes without a single concentration camp required, since the people volunteered to pay the price of their own home imprisonment. As a result, the power elite and their men in black, who had carefully planned the 2020 lockdown decades in advance, patted themselves on the back for leaving nothing to chance and laughed at how predictable, compliant, naive, and trusting most of the masses can be about officials whom the people think they actually elected, when politicians are pre-selected based on the politician's willingness to pretend for the masses that they are all about the people, promising to bring about change when the terms of their employment are contingent on officials and politicians defending and upholding the status quo to ensure that nothing ever changes. The candidates are chosen and placed in strategic positions based on their ability and willingness to comply or to sell out. That is why integrity among politicians, for the most part, is an oxymoron. Now, question number two has to do with sexism. Men, don't get offended by my candor, but since it's important for men and women to unite together to help save family units and to protect children, this fact begs the question, why haven't. All of those, quote, gentlemen who profess to love, honor, and cherish women, and those gentlemen who feign to care about the welfare of children, done nothing collectively to dismantle a misogynistic, patriarchal system that benefits men at the expense of women while raining down dishonor, terror, and degradation upon women and their children. Why do most males work together in overt, covert, and inadvertent ways to uphold, justify, or perpetuate an unjust and inequitable system that exploits the women who give birth to men and to the offspring of men? Could the answer be embedded in the unconscious fear programmed in the DNA of males regarding the world returning to the way it originally once was? And this is proven archaeologically. When matriarchal societies governed the world equitably in peaceful societies with no war or divisions between the rich and poor, no nation against nation, no women and men against each other, because both men and women rule together for the greater good of the all. And, of course, no racism or discrimination existed against those with different skin color or those with different belief systems and cultures, because matriarchal cultures know that we are all one family. You can research this all on your own, beginning with the award-winning book, The Chalice and the Blade. Now, question number three has to do with racism. Why haven't well-meaning, non-racist whites come together in white supremacy by not practicing it themselves and by developing a zero tolerance toward those who do practice it? Racism is institutionalized in American government. White Democrats are covertly as racist as Republicans. They are just not as vocal and upfront about it. As for Republicans, they don't hide, for the most part, how they feel. All one has to do is listen to the undertones of self-proclaimed Republican patriots. The racist, nationalistic, and sexist undertones are found in the contempt they have for non-whites. They openly oppose immigrants, Black Lives Matter, and the inclusion of ethnically diverse history in public schools. Their rabid support of Trump and their refusal to recognize anyone other than Trump as president has everything to do with Trump's own sexist, nationalistic, classist, and racist views, which should surprise no one since Trump's father was an avowed Klan member. The people of color who support Trump tend to be Anglophiles who adore their conquerors, or they are naive idealists who manage to believe that even though no president of America has ever kept his promise to the people, that this one will. Trump will do it. Never mind that Trump did an about-face during his first term, or these people are religious fundamentalists who never read Machiavelli's Art of War, which admonishes princes who are the ruling power elite to pretend to be religious and pious in order to fool the people and gain their confidence. Now, the fourth question has to do with classism. Even though I get why the primary division is between those who are vaxxed versus those who are anti-vaxxers, it amazes me how people appear to be unable to connect the dots or to see how interconnected everything is that is happening around the world. There appears to be a lot of denial and very little focus on the complete destruction of the middle class and the unjustifiable 30% increase in goods and services from 2020 to 2021, not to mention the closing of small businesses. The crazy part is how many people are afraid to work because of this virus, which the Prime Minister of Australia bragged had not killed a single person in his country, even as he immediately proceeded to implement an unprecedented fascist police state that is now physically forcing his citizens to be vaccinated while rounding up school children into stadiums to vaccinate permission from parents. Trillions of dollars of economic stimulus money went into contact tracing in America, wherein Americans got one stimulus check in 2020 and one in 2021, neither of which was enough money to pay rent and buy food for 1 month, even for poor people. The fact that the people are not complaining about this, in addition to the loss of other freedoms, is baffling, quite frankly. Now, that's the end of what I wrote last night, which I'm putting together as a video to accompany the video that I just released a few weeks ago on the isms, because from my perspective as a researcher and professor, without understanding the big picture of how people are being manipulated and how the whole world got bamboozled and enslaved, it's really difficult to come up with a plan to move beyond it. So I'm going to take a quick break right now and let anyone who's on the phone who has questions to ask questions right now before I go into the introduction that goes into a lot more detail about the hidden hands that are behind all of this.
Yes, Doctor, this is Sam Harris. I do have a question.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Thank you for your presentation. I have a PhD in the isms and schisms.
My question
to you is, what is your solution? So if everything you say is correct, what is your solution?
Okay, well, that's where I'm going to get into that in the next one, in the next chapter, because there is a solution, but people have got to overcome the 8 addictive shadow cells, which prevent people from working together. When you look at the isms, and since you study them as well as I do, you know that if, number one, you've got the world divided in half with men, you know, opposing women or women opposing men, then you can't win anything. So you have to come together on the isms. And I will send you a link to my documentary on the isms, where I present the solutions in that documentary. And I'm happy to go into them, but I didn't want to go into the solutions right now until I give more of the agenda that's going on. So
okay, I have a question. I want to ask it a different way. So
okay.
We can't get into what the solution is. So my next question would be, currently in the current environment that we're in, African American
mm-hmm.
families are devastated. The businesses are devastated.
Yes. Absolutely.
How in the world are we going to continue on if we as a group don't take the vaccination and continue to see our population dwindle? I'm seeing more African Americans die
mm-hmm.
in the last than I've seen
yes.
all of last year.
I
because
agree.
In our there's a high concentration of African Americans that did not take the vaccine because of what happened in Tuskegee
right.
and mm-hmm. all of the other experiences that have happened. So how are we able to overcome that and to try to focus on the future? Because one thing for sure, Doctor, there is nothing that's smarter than nature. Nature will figure
right.
a way out when no one
yeah.
else can.
I agree. And that's the point, is that you have your immune system. And the trick with this vaccine is, and that's why I wanted to get into what this vaccine is doing to people. I understand that people feel like, okay, we might as well just give in and take this vaccine so that we can get back to normal. But the point is that if you have kept up with everything that's going on, you know that there is no end to the number of vaccines that they're mandating. It will be vaccines forever. And the deadly properties, the reason why you saw an increase in deaths this year, and if you do the research on it, the people are dying because of the vaccine, not because of the virus. And so one sure way to kill off Black people, and that is the agenda, is to get more people to get vaccinated. Now, I can't tell people what to do, you know, because members of my family have gotten vaccinated. People that I really love have gotten vaccinated who said that they would never do it. And every one of them are sick and suffering from the vaccine. So, and quite frankly, the doctors that I am in contact with all over the world and that I'm working with, who we're all trying to put together, you know, put our heads together to figure out how to help the people who took the vaccines and regretted it and who are really sick. The biggest problem with the vaccine right now is the mRNA and the Lucifer erase that's in it. And, you know, they announced to everybody that Lucifer erase is in it and that it will erase your DNA using this mRNA. And that is the scary part, is that they're using computer code to rewrite your DNA and to turn people into cyborgs and into what they're calling post-humans.
Doctor, this is Bilal Bynum. I know our time is getting a little short. We're looking forward to having you back. But some of these isms that we're talking about here, I mean, like, brother, I got all kinds of questions when it comes to these isms, because, number one, I hear what you're saying, and I've considered much about what you're saying. But, see, when we start talking about situations, I mean, we're talking, I hear a lot of politics in what you're saying. I hear a lot of religious, and then I hear this thing about the New World Order. Now, let me just say this. Now, let's just say this. One of the reasons I became a Muslim is because when it comes to, came to the New World Order and a lot of this stuff that you're seeing that about the, like I said, when it comes to politics, when it comes to religious, when it comes to the vaccination, everything we're talking about here is talking about white politicians and their way of life and the things that they say are the correct way or the wrong way of doing things. My thing is this. As long as we as African Americans, and this is what for the last, ever since we've been here, we've been taught the white man's religious.
Absolutely.
We've been taught the white man.
It's a problem.
We've been taught the white man everything.
I agree.
But I'm saying, but like Brother Harris was saying, when do we get rid of our problems? Because it's something that we're
going to have. Can you repeat that? I didn't hear you. Hold on.
When will we as African Americans unload these problems? Because, like I said, these problems are not problems that we as African Americans created or had anything to do with.
I agree.
It was problems that we have to live with. And so, you know, when you were talking a few moments ago, and I was just saying, especially when I saw in Texas where you have Black Haitians being whipped by being beaten by whips. And I know that when it comes to the state of Texas, as far as African, as far as I am concerned, Texas has never given up slavery. And so I mean, when you start talking about a state like Texas, I've never seen nothing that has ever had anything to do with anything good coming out of Texas. Texas,
well, listen, the whole United States never gave up slavery.
I'm going to let you come right back, but my whole point is this.
Okay.
I was just saying, once I looked at that picture yesterday of these Black folks being beaten at that border and trying to beat them back into the water, I was saying this and then and there. It makes no difference where Donald Trump is in office. It makes no difference whether Joe Biden, is in the office. It makes no difference whether you're Democrat or you're Republican. We as African Americans have to unload the white man's religious and everything else that he's imposed on us. And so I even came to the conclusions, you know, when you start talking about a solution, and of course we don't know it, but me, I've been cussing Donald Trump out for the longest fine thing, and he was the worst. But you know the thing about Donald Trump? Donald Trump is not a racist. Donald Trump is a bigot. Donald Trump loves power. He can make a deal with Donald Trump. And you want to know something? I can, as far as a business person, that's what we were talking about here as African Americans, we need our independence. The only thing way we're going to get our independence is that we need to have our own community. So that's why I say, as African Americans, I would love to go to somebody like a Donald Trump and say, look, I'm going to make a deal with you. I'll put you in power, but I want four states that makes me as black folks totally independent of everything you folks do. You see, we got
you are on the money, and that is a part of the solution, you know, which I don't know how much. I was told that there was more than an hour, but we can go ahead and get into the solution.
We're going to have you to come back. Like I said, not only business, but politics is very important in our community, and we must address the two. And so I'm going to turn this back over to you because, again, you brought this subject up. It's a very important subject. It's got to be dealt with. Like I said, my concerns when it comes to some of these isms is something that we as African Americans are going to have to deal with and not go by what has been imposed on us religiously, politician-wise. Or any of the things that's been imposed for the last 400 years on African Americans. But I'm going to turn it back over to you.
You are absolutely right.
I'm going to turn it right back over to you, but I look forward to continuing this.
Okay, well, listen, I am, you know, like I studied Marcus Garvey and his movement and, you know, the black Muslims, you know, growing up in the 60s, you know, I worked with them. And they've done incredible things for black people. And part of the solution, that the only one that I can see right now, is exactly what you're saying, is that people are, black people who are like-minded are going to have to get together. And because of Agenda 21 and the controlling of the water, I mean, 20 years ago, I saw where they started buying up the water aquifers. Black people need their own land. They've got to grow their own food, and they've got to get together, get out of the cities and small communities and grow their own food and have their own wells or their own source of water, because that is how they're going to be able to accomplish the depopulation agenda, because they're having a hard time with these vaccines killing black people, because the melanin in black people is so magical and so powerful. They don't know, they want it for themselves, and they don't know what to do, which is why they're now mandating that, no, not just two vaccines now, it's going to be a booster vaccine every time you look around, because they're trying to figure out how to kill off black people. So going along, the people that have gone along to get along, you know, by taking these vaccines, everybody I know is suffering from it and regret having done it. And the hardest thing is to undo something versus to prevent it. So my thing is, I can't stop people. You know, everybody's got free will. I can't stop people from taking it, but I'm, you know, a psychologist. I'm a professor of critical thinking, and I believe that, you know, my role is to inform people and give them the information that they're, you know, that they might be missing, and then say, okay, whatever decision you make, let it be an informed decision. But I'm here to say that we're running out of time, guys, and if you notice, everything is ramping up. And if people don't start leaving the cities and coming together in these communities, to that are self-sufficient, you're not going to survive in the cities. And I know people don't like hearing that, but you got to look back at the Nazis and what they did. The first thing they did is they rounded, they took them out of their houses, stole their property from them, threw them into what they call the ghetto. And before they sent them to concentration camps, well, they don't even have to do that today. You know, they're just going to come and pull people out of their houses. So where do you think they're going to send the military first? It's going to be in the cities. And going back to Donald Trump, yes, he's an opportunist. But make no mistake about it. The people that support Trump, the vast majority of them, are white supremacists, and he will get back in office in 2024, and there will be an ethnic cleansing with these crazy racists that support him, and you're not going to be able to do anything about it because that's his base of people. Now, negotiating with these politicians, I say people just need to get together. You know, there are enough black people who own land. There are enough churches that own land, you know, for people to do their own thing. And, you know as well as I do, negotiating with people in power, every treaty that white people have ever made with Indians, blacks, or whoever, they have gone back on them. So I think it's time for black people to rely on black people and do this without trying to get the government involved. You saw what happened to Marcus Garvey. You know, he had an excellent plan, and they sabotaged that. We're going to have to do it ourselves.
May I interject here? This has truly, and I want to just thank you for coming on, because I wanted you to also get around to speaking. And will you be available to come back and to finish this? It sounds to me more like a series.
It is.
Rather than just a one-time thing.
Much information. Yes, I would be happy to come back anytime.
Dr. Grant, I wanted to also say, I want to thank you because I listened to you when you were saying to drink that hot cup of water. But the only thing I recall or remember, hun, is the hot cup of water. Because when we came back from our little trip. Let me say this, my brother.
I'm sorry, we got to cut it. We're going off the air.
Drink that hot cup of water.
Please,
Dr. Greg, everyone, I do appreciate you.
And we ask that you will come back next week. We're going to have the opportunity to see you next week if you come back next week.
It is my pleasure and my honor, and I thank you for your input, because I believe Muslims have always had it right.
Okay, well, sister, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Brother Harris, I look forward to your return, because Brother Harris, I think the information we're hearing today is every reason in the world why we need to become vested together and create our own communities. Because like Brother Harris like to say, if you own the community, if you own your own decisions. So again,
I think going to the white man and making deals with him, no, sorry. History has proven you can't trust nothing they say.
Until next week, brothers and sisters, we'll be right back here and we'll be making our own decisions. Brother Harris,
wonderful. I'll send a link.
Go ahead and make them real fast.
I'll send a link to my documentary for you guys.
Okay,
Britta needs to give me your email, and I'll send it to you tonight.
Just like the river I've been running ever since, it's been a long But I know change won't come.